Around the NFL Podcast. It's loose on one Tito's and soda.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
It's good to be back in the United States of America.
Los Angeles greeting us with some 85 degree Fahrenheit. Forget that Celsius garbage weather. Oh, yeah.
A little bit of a statement, I thought.
Big weather take by Greg.
Yeah, a little bit of
I'm just saying, LA was like, hey, remember me? Remember how beautiful
it was?
A statement.
It was a statement game by the weather. Because the weather usually is seasonably warm. In LA this time of year, but they made sure it wasn't going to be one of those weird overcast LA days when we came back after a day of a week of 60 and raining. It's like, hey, welcome back, boys. Don't fly away too, you know, anytime soon.
I like the rain and like the trench coats and the umbrellas as a change up, just not as kind of the permanent situation.
Other than the meteorological elements of that trip, it was an amazing trip to England again, and the chance to catch up with all our fans out there, and the live show was a huge hit. Got to meet so many people, and everything really was great. It was a great trip, Mark. Mark, are you going to talk? What's up?
I'm just absorbing the incredible content and information that you've been providing about the weather in Los Angeles for the first 8 minutes of this show. But the trip was amazing, and I keep thinking, you do that thing where, like, if the week ago was your vacation, you keep thinking, oh, it's Wednesday morning. Where was I on Wednesday morning in London time? But then you have to add 8 hours, and I couldn't figure out any of these equations. Mm. I don't remember. It just went by like a dream.
I think the highlight for me, like the quote of the week, was right after we finished the live show on Friday and we came off stage to thunderous applause, Mark pulled me aside and he goes, Dan, pinch me. This is too perfect.
That is not. I'm not even going to interfere. Like, please believe that that's how I approached it.
You had me until the too perfect part.
It's like the fourth live thing we've had in London. I mean, I'm over pinching myself.
You had me at pinch me. Then you lost me.
I just actually wanted you to pinch me, but you refused. It's fine.
You know, back in my mailman days, when I desperately needed an escape before the proliferation of the internet, I had this idea of virtual reality tours of like great cities and locations around the world. And, you know, Anthony Bourdain came along and did that much better than I ever.
Oh, right? He got on your corner before you can get there.
But, having the NFL pay for us to go travel to great cities is kind of cool. And if you think about it, podcasts function in kind of the same way as virtual reality tours anyway. Mm. Not everybody can cover the NFL, but they can come along for the ride when we do. And we see that a lot at the live show, that kind of attitude.
Are you saying what I think you're saying?
What's that?
European Tour 2020.
Yeah.
Well put, Wes. All right. Big show today. So, yeah, we're back. We got a day. Usually, as you know, if you're a regular listener, the show usually drops on a Tuesday. But we needed that, as they say, a buzzy phrase in this decade that's coming to a close. A mental health day was necessary. Which we got, and I think we're all feeling and looking better. So let's get to it, because the NFL soap opera, it did not slow down while we were gone. In fact, a lot of huge plot lines. We have trades to get to. We have a trade deadline that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And with the big trades with Jacksonville and the Rams and what could come in the days and weeks ahead, how about this seg? Trade scenarios that could come to fruition. Like, you know, like real trade situations that could pop up. And then all we have to do is nail one, and we're geniuses. So we'll go twice each.
I thought the segment was called Trade Scenarios That Aren't Stupid Clickbait Buy and Four Idiots.
That is the full name of the seg. And that's true, too, because this isn't going to be like, you know, send Dak Prescott to the Titans for 14 first-round picks. No, these are things that could conceivably happen in the National Football League.
You know, and it's a temptation when we do these segments to come up with scenarios that are literally white-hot fire and, you know, don't necessarily make a lot. The trades that happen outside of a couple of the big names are rather methodical, so maybe some of these will be low octane and less interesting, but correct.
Is that a preview of yours?
I'm just saying, I tried to approach this very robotically this time because I think that usually these instructions...
Usually you're the one that...
These instructions are an in-house, you know, directive for me not to come up with something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's mostly directed at you. You're like, all right, can we not include something that, like, includes Dr. Chow?
Or ponies.
Right, and...
So I have followed your directions to a T.
I wouldn't call it directions, but if that's how you, you know, heard them or felt them... That's fine, too.
That is how I heard them and felt them.
All right. And also the Thursday night football preview, a great, great game, I think. An AFC West battle between two teams going in different directions right now. But before that, yes, I mentioned trades. So let's hit the news.
Oh, my God. It's a tsunami.
A trade tsunami, that is.
And no, you cannot get that sound drop for your own. Like, that is not something that's downloadable, but perhaps if we can monetize it, we will let you get Frags, you know, making that statement again. You can have that. Do you want to hear it again?
Oh, yeah.
I would like
to. All right, let's listen to it again.
Oh, my God. It's a tsunami.
A trade tsunami, that is.
Whoa. How about that?
Frags should get a job, like, as the Audible voice.
We
on,
just got a window
books.
Into Dan's mind. He has been listening to that by himself many times.
Whoa. All right. Let's get to it. Jalen Ramsey got his wish. He was traded on Tuesday to the Los Angeles Rams. Of course he was. The Jags getting two first-round picks in 2020 and 2021, as well as a fourth-round pick in 2021. The Jags confirmed this trade. And now Ramsey joins LA, a team trying to find itself right now. And in the day hours before this trade went down, we found out that Aqib Talib, their veteran corner, was sent to IR, and Marcus Peters, who once upon a time was added to be the big missing piece filler for the Rams, had been traded to the Ravens for 50 cents on the dollar. Well, now here comes Ramsey to save the day, Wes?
Well, that's the plan. They think that he's a defense, a team-changing kind of player. This is the most compensation, for a defensive back in history, according to Pro Football Journal. This is the highest anyone's ever paid for a defensive back, way more than the Bucs ever gave up for Darrell Revis. Since 1986, 33 years ago, only about a dozen guys have been traded for at least two first-round picks. So he's in rare company here. And I think the way I look at this is the Rams don't think about their future the way, say, the Jaguars do, or the Bengals do, or the Redskins do. They think about their future the way the Yankees, Real Madrid, Manchester United think about their franchise. They want to be the number one brand in sports. Right now, they're tied with the Red Sox for 12th in the world, according to Forbes. And with that stadium opening
up, what
does that mean? With the number one brand in sports, it means they're operating at a much higher level than any of these other NFL teams, except for the Cowboys.
I don't trust this Forbes nonsense.
Okay. I mean, well, you can use someone else.
You get his point, though. Yes. What they're trying to do here is
I was just surprised by that.
With that stadium, they think they can do it. The stadium, the market, you know, they're willing to give up their draft picks, and they don't have a first-round pick until 2022. They'll end up giving up five first-round draft picks in a row, 5 years in a row.
Does anybody else think that's crazy?
Because I do.
Everything that we've learned about team building over the years that we've worked here together or just as an NFL fan is that a big part of building a real sustainable enterprise is through the draft, through the young players, and the salaries that aren't overly bloated that come with a young player out of the draft. So to completely, Mark, remove that from the blueprint here, it feels like you're flirting with disaster.
Well, so I can think it's a move toward the toward the insane, but they can prove me completely wrong by winning a Super Bowl title this year because they must feel themselves to be in that realm. Not that they're, you know, logically super far removed from it, but I'm not sure this is even a better team than it was a year ago. I don't think it is. I think they've got distinct depth issues. Their offensive line is a mess. Todd Gurley is a big question mark. And the biggest cornerback trades that I can remember, because I don't really put Revis into this when he went to the Bucks, because you sent him to Tampa into the total netherworld, was when, you know, mid-90s, when Deion Sanders flip-flopped between the Cowboys and Niners and operated as a last piece of the puzzle that brought both teams a world championship. This is a last piece of the puzzle type move on paper, and I don't think that they're a piece away. You look what else has happened to their secondary in the last 24 hours, and I'm just not sure the Rams are that much better of a team right now than they were a day ago. Maybe I'm completely wrong about this. It hit me as a little bit too much of a cost. The
You're
cost
referring
was exorbitant.
To Johnny Johnson, their safety, also moved to IR. So 3/4 of their secondary 48 hours ago no longer connected.
Well, Tlaib was, you know, not good this year. He was a below average starter. Troy Hill, for what it's worth, has played a little better when he's been in there. John Johnson is a huge loss.
Johnny.
The fact they
put Taylor Rapp into the starting lineup now too, so that could end up being, you know, who knows what that could be.
John Johnson, I think, is a good player, and you're losing him off a team that is already shorthanded. But the fact they knew about that when they made this trade tells me it's not for this year. They know they're not as good a team as they were a year ago. I don't think they're blind to that. I think they're certainly hopeful that they could be a much better team by the end of this year, that they can figure out ways to improve. It's only six games here. But the analysis on this trade that's, you know, flummoxed me the most is that this is some sort of win now. This is it. They're putting all their chips in the middle of the table. That's what everyone said a year ago about them too. And they do have a ton of changes coming up on their defense. But he's under contract through next year at a very, you know, relatively cheap rate. So he's in their team next year. They have the franchise tag after that. And you, of course, do not make this deal without the expressed plan, whether it happens or not, to sign Jalen Ramsey long term. I mean, they just aren't going to make it. And Ramsey, in his first comments since the trade, says he plans to be there, you know, forever and ever. They're going by the logic that it's easy to get picks, and this does run counter to basically everything we've talked about and seen for a long time, which in my mind makes it seem interesting and maybe valuable. You always want to zig when the rest of the league is zagging. Good difference-making players are a lot harder to find than first-round picks. First-round pick, everyone gets those. Not many people can get game-changing players like Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. I guess, you know, part of the question is Ramsey that sort of player? That's maybe the biggest gamble of this entire deal.
It's not just a narrative. Mike Silver, per a organizational decision-maker with the Rams, the quote is, "We're swinging for the fences."
Yeah.
We're in it to win it. That tells me it's for this year and the future, but it's
definitely for this year, too. But it's for both. I think you can do both at the same time always. Like, well, this weird thing that it's like a choice. They're planning to be competitive and good every single season. Like, that's the plan. That they, when they traded for Sammy Watkins, that felt like a short-term thing. But then you get the compensatory pick back, and that was a deal that went terribly. They're operating very differently in terms of their team building. There is certainly risk to it. But I think they're looking at, like, if you can have five or six core huge difference makers, we can figure out the rest around him. The problem, you know, the bigger problem is Jared Goff that sort of player? And certainly I think Todd Gurley is not that sort of player, right?
Their eyes are wide open. I think they realize it's a risk, but they look at it like, even if there's only, like, say, a 10% chance of us becoming Super Bowl champions, look what, if we manage to nail that, drive through the eye of the needle, look what our franchise will become.
If you do that,
and you have to give yourself that opportunity,
right?
If it's a chance.
If they win a Super Bowl, any questions surrounding this deal melt away, because it's going to include Jalen Ramsey probably dancing around the field as they're up in the fourth quarter, and will look great. My concern, whether it's a win this year or a win over the next 2 years type thing, is that
5 years. I think he's going to be on this team.
But there is another way. It's not just that only the bold teams ship away first round picks and operate to ignore the draft, because you've got a lot of money tied up in Jared Goff. You've got a lot of money tied up in Todd Gurley. I think there's questions about both of those players. In general, I think that it's very fair to critique this. If the Rams come out of this season losing a wild card game and head into the offseason with no first round draft picks over the next 5 years, there's different ways to build teams. This is a distinctive departure from the norm, and trade tsunamis are fine. Too much tsunami is too much tsunami.
Now to the Jaguars side of things, starting with a missive from Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Tom Coughlin. Given the situation with Jalen, we made this decision based on what we thought is in the best interest of the Jacksonville Jaguars. For this season and well into the future, we feel the trade that we struck with the Rams gives us great value for the next two drafts, and we remain very confident that our team today will compete this season for a division title. Jalen was a productive player, but the time came to move on, and we wish him and his family the best in Los Angeles. I've made myself exceedingly clear on the Jalen Ramsey situation. I found it distasteful and ugly that he sat out these past three games, and I thought it said a lot about him. And good luck to the Rams. And hopefully he stays happy with Los Angeles, so the same thing's going to happen to you one day. But he is out of the building, and you have to – I thought one of the downsides, in addition to abandoning your teammates like Jalen Ramsey did, was that you may kneecap the Jags in terms of trade value, but that's not what happened here, obviously. They are nicely set up now to kind of figure out what comes next for this franchise. So while you don't want to ever take out a gifted cornerback in his mid-20s, at least they didn't end up in a situation where they're getting 50 cents on the dollar. It was pretty good value, all things considered.
I think good owner work by Shad Khan, that he stepped in. Sounds like, according to Charles Robinson of Yahoo, he didn't really want to trade Ramsey. That I think the front office, you know, according to the reporting, and you can kind of read between the lines, Coughlin and Ramsey had a dust-up. They had something that happened between them that immediately afterwards Ramsey asked for the trade, and they were never able to bridge that gap. Khan was trying to have it both ways, where he was trying to get them back together. He was trying to keep Ramsey as part of the organization. And while I think some teams thought initially, and there are reports out there who it was, the Eagles, the Saints, the Bears maybe, that Ramsey was going to get traded pretty quickly, Khan kind of stepped in, said, slow your roll. We don't want to do this. And what ended up happening over the last couple of weeks is the price tag went way up because the Rams specifically got more either desperate or just willing to make a big time deal to the point where you kind of have to say yes, because what are we doing here? Khan was in this position where I think he was feeling like he had to choose between Tom Coughlin and his player. And I don't think he necessarily even made that choice, but his statement was really interesting today. Shad Khan said that the Jaguars are doing just fine today. I give kudos to our football staff, not only for managing this matter, blah, blah, blah. Credit also goes to our players for their professional approach during this situation. It did not go unnoticed. Now it's time to turn attention to, again, what's most important, the Jaguars. Now that sounds good, but you've got a strange set situation right now, and I'll shut up in a second, that the front office maybe wanted one thing. You have a coach who's maybe out there, who knows what he wants. Then you have a GM who doesn't really seem to be in control, the David Caldwell. And then you have Khan, who I think is a good owner overall, but there's a lot of things going on. And I thought Doug Marrone's comments today in his press conference were really telling when he was asked about the trade.
I just wish I can give you the insight and the answers that question needs to be answered. I don't have that. So, and I wish we can get someone up here that can answer it.
Motioning to the side of the room, but to his PR director.
You know what I'm saying, Gene? It's me. You know what I'm saying? So I really don't know. You know, you don't know until down the road.
Translation, they don't tell me anything.
He sounds like every uncle that was ever at a family barbecue when I was growing up.
I think they're treating him like...
Translation, I'm not involved.
They're treating him like an uncle at the barbecue.
And why do I have to answer for stuff I don't want to do or not involved in? Something else.
I do think, though, that like there are a lot of owners who are great at business outside of football, and they come in and they can't handle the football business at all. I don't feel that way about Shad Khan.
So, yes, Marcus Peters, as we said, he gets traded to the Ravens in exchange for linebacker Kenny Young, also a undisclosed draft pick. I think it's a fifth-round pick?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Peters gets a fresh start with Baltimore. Seems like a very Baltimorean trade. Chris Wessling?
Well, the Ravens are a defense in flux right now. They signed a pair of inside linebackers off the street, L.J. Fort and Josh Bynes, who immediately went into their starting lineup and their starters were benched. Now their secondary is getting the same treatment. Jimmy Smith finally returned from his MCL injury to practice this week. You throw Marcus Peters in there, Tony Jefferson, their safety out for the year. They've got a lot of flux right there on their defense. So they are doing the same thing the Rams are kind of doing, like starting over in week 7 on your defense as far as making huge changes.
That Peters is playing pretty well this year. That's the strange thing about this trade.
We hear
he's not a great tackler, but I think he was playing fairly well. It's funny because everyone is so excited about the Peters-Salib combo. It didn't really work out. Then again, you think about it, and it's like, you know, they held the Patriots to 13 points in the Super Bowl. Their defense had a Super Bowl winning performance, and then everyone would have said that those moves were fine.
Their cornerbacks were terrible last year.
I wouldn't say they were terrible. Talib was fine.
If you read about this also, you're hearing that the Rams are sick of Marcus Peters too, potentially. Well, behind the scenes.
It was 2 days ago, Sean McVay.
As were the Chiefs once upon a time.
They absolutely wanted to re-sign him.
This is a football issue, not a character issue. You know, Les Snead said even today, like when I told Marcus Peters about this, no athlete could have handled it better. He was classy. I don't think it's a character thing. Freelancing on the football field is a football issue, not a character thing. So I don't want our podcast to go out there and say this guy was a handful for the Rams to deal with, because we're not hearing that.
And I think he fits what the Ravens like to do. They want to be able to get a little more creative up front by letting their corners cover man-to-man, which is certainly, you know, the way Peters rolls instead of playing zone. I mean, that's a question about Ramsey, too. I want to see Jalen Ramsey kind of be the best corner in the league. I think he's only been at that level for spurts. You know what I mean? And so we'll see. Like,
for one whole season.
Sure, but that was a couple seasons ago. And so I think it's a great move for the Ravens. I mean, they traded a guy. Kenny Young was just a throw-in. He had been benched for 3 straight weeks.
The Rams decided they wanted to pay Jalen Ramsey rather than Marcus Peters.
Yep.
One more trade here. The Browns give up on Austin Corbett, the offensive lineman that they took 33 overall in the 2018 draft. They send him to the Rams, so the Rams make another deal for a fifth-round draft pick in 2021. Mark Corbett, when he came aboard, that's essentially almost a first-round pick there, but they decided quite quickly, I guess, that he wasn't the answer for them.
Well, that second round also brought Nick Chubb, who has been a raging success, but that is a John Dorsey swing and a miss and a totally acknowledging it by moving on him. They tried everything. They tried putting him at every position to the point where he was considered to be the future left tackle. They thought he might be able to take over the center position from J.C. Tretter, who now they need to re-sign. I don't know what the Rams, they probably think we can turn him around and fix it, but they're going to get stuck having to deal lower picks or work on guys that other teams are passing on. I think directly relates to their lack of higher picks in the draft, because how are you going to replace Andrew Whitworth, who's not going to be there probably after this season, or probably shouldn't be? You're not going to do it with a fourth round pick or a fifth round pick. That is where I do get concerned about the high bounty of place. There's only certain places you can get a left tackle.
Those
of any worth.
Concerns.
Right. And there's no solution that seems apparent for this year's offensive line. I mean, Austin Corbett certainly isn't it. They might as well take a swing, but it's like there's no obvious way for them to fix it.
In other Browns news, this happened right before we came upstairs. Miles Garrett tweeted out, and I'll read the tweet word for word here, a, quote, fan, close quote, hopped out of his car to take a picture with me and then punched me in my face. Put your legs into it. Might actually made me flinch. Thumbs up. Now, this, I'm kind of fascinated by this because Miles Garrett is the most, arguably, of course, but I believe the most physically imposing player in football. When you see, if you remember Hard Knocks, just him walking around with his shirt off, he seems superhuman. I mean, his size and his strength and his build, he would be the last guy you would ever try to sucker punch. And then there's all, you know, now, who would do such a thing, Mark? Do you know the person who did this? Let's start there.
No, of course not. But I mean, if you're going to go and play the sucker punching fan role, why go hit?
I didn't know there was one.
Well, I don't know that. I didn't know there was either. But you don't want to nail some third string linebacker. Go for the height and go for the best target you can to Miles Garrett. He just brushed it off entirely because I think he's made entirely out of iron and stone and can't be, you know, knocked around by some jabroni fan. But to me, a non-story.
No, that's an amazing story. It's not a great story, but that's a story.
Get it together, bro.
Find the guy and lock him up.
Find that dude.
Yeah,
lock him up. And you know what?
Not legal, by the way.
Ask him about this. I want to know why you did it. I got a feeling maybe he was looking for money. He was trying to goad the millionaire football player to knock him out, but that's just speculation by me. Let's move on. A little serious in the room right now.
Talk about
let's loosen up a little bit.
Punching above your weight.
Okay, here we go. Keep moving. The Titans will start Ryan Tannehill over Marcus Mariota against the Chargers. That came from Rap Sheet and Tom Pelissero on Tuesday night. This comes, of course, after Mariota struggled mightily against the Denver Broncos. He couldn't lead the team past midfield before Tannehill came on and finished out that 16-0 defeat. So here comes Tannehill. I think a lot of people, Greg, saw this as a possibility at some point in the season. Are you surprised that it happened in the middle of October?
I'm very surprised. Not, I guess not as much after watching Mariota this season that it happened, but I wouldn't have guessed that coming into the year. Because Tannehill has so many of the similar issues that Mariota does, which starts with kind of a lack of feel of the position and reading defenses and getting rid of the ball quickly, making quick decisions. They're very similar players, both very, very athletic. I don't know. It's hard to imagine Tannehill saving them.
Well, they both, to use a phrase that Alex Mason, our buddy with Sky Sports, they both eat sacks. They just love to munch on sacks all day long. That's their style. And Mariota had gotten to the point where he can't drive the ball down the field or into tight windows. That was never a strength of his, and it had gotten worse. The Titans, by DVOA, Football Outsiders metric, 29 in efficiency, 27 in pass, 26 in run, 32 in pass blocking, 27 in run blocking, 29 in yards per drive, 28 in drive success rate. They were miserable. They were down there with the Dolphins and Bengals and the pre-Darnold Jets as the dregs of the lead. And you had to change it up. You know, I was reminded, someone found a tweet of mine from Thanksgiving time, 2016.
What a time.
Mariota was coming off an 8-game stretch with a 21-3 TD to INT ratio and a 118 passer rating. The Titans were averaging over 30 points a game during that 8-game stretch. That ended up being sort of where the wave crested and then rolled back and washed away his Titans career.
Yeah, I don't view the move as having really anything to do with Ryan Tannehill. I think it's just a team that probably could have benched Mariota last year and benched him for good. And they're done with him. He's gone. He won't be on the team next season. And it's probably a softer entree into that move by simply putting Tannehill in there earlier.
I'd guess Mariota would probably start again just because I feel like their problems are so significant.
Their offensive line is dead last in pass blocking. And their new play caller, Arthur Smith, hasn't done anything
to impress anyone. Mularkey was the peak. He was peak Titans. Everyone, including in this room, myself, we had a lot of fun at old Mike Mularkey's expense. But you know what? It never got any better. That was actually the best the Titans ever were.
Exotic Smash Mouth, baby.
There's a discussion to be had. What would you rather have? The first round pick, especially the early first round, like Mariota was number two overall, that flames out spectacularly, or, and you know pretty quickly that he's not the answer, like a Paxton Lynch, or is Mariota almost worse? A guy that you essentially dedicated 5 years to, waited and waited and hoped, and now where are they? I mean, they're a host of 9-7 seasons, one playoff win. And now they're going to essentially start over at the position. It's kind of, in a way, a worst-case scenario when it comes to building through the top of the draft.
It's probably more off-seasons of trying this narrative where, Mariota's put on weight and blah, 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 and he's looking strong. And, it's the same thing with Winston. It's a half a decade under the river.
It's worse.
It's a different room in hell. I don't know why it's not worse.
It's somehow worse than the huge bust. Well, the worst possible result is getting Tannehill. I mean, Tannehill was 7 seasons, right? Or 6 seasons, where you gave him a second contract because he kind of tricked you into it. And Bortles was like that, too.
You could say Dalton, too.
Right.
Dalton, at one point, 2015, they were a Super Bowl
contender. I shouldn't have said Dalton. Let's leave Dalton out of this.
I'm just saying they were a Super Bowl contender.
Yes, he's the Dalton scale.
I just think for the health of your franchise, you're probably better off flaming out and then trying again because unless you're actually right, you just need as many.
Johnny Manziel, a perfect example. Horrible, embarrassing, terrible, but very quickly they were able to regroup and then go get the guy they liked.
Well, all right. So, if you're a fan base that's lived through both kind of failures, neither are pleasant, and there isn't a real way to measure one being a lot worse than the other, I don't think. But you want a front office that has eyes open that says, we're 3 years into this. We could continue to sell people Jameis Winston. He's going to continue to have 3 and 4 and 5 interception games, and then we'll give you a fiddle and song dance all offseason. The coach X is going to fix him, but the better front offices say we can self-scout. He's not working. We're 3 years into Mariota. cut bait.
Now, I don't think this is why the Rams are trading away first round picks, but I think it was Warren Sharp tweeted out the top five picks at quarterback in the last 25 years. It's pretty low hit rate. It is less than half. And, you know, and even the hits are, you know, include guys like Stafford. It's great. It is, like, so tough.
It's not that, yeah, it's tough to evaluate your own quarterback when you can't extract his surrounding talent and the play caller.
And if you thought Ryan Tannehill replacing Marcus Mariota ultimately didn't really matter, I got something for you. Even more down this path, Ryan Fitzpatrick will start for the Dolphins on Sunday against the Bills, sending Josh Rosen to the bench. This comes 4 days after Brian Flores, the Dolphins coach, said that Josh Rosen, the second-year passer, will start for the rest of the season. He had a change of heart, and a lot of it, I imagine, had to do with Rosen's abysmal showing against the previously winless Redskins, where he went 15 of 25 for 85 yards and two terrible interceptions. So Fitzmagic back in, and it does show you the difference. Brian Flores wants to win games. The Dolphins, as an organization, want to lose games. Well, the coach wins on this one because Fitzpatrick absolutely gives them a better chance to win, I believe, at this time. But still, what I mean by it doesn't matter, well, the Dolphins are irrelevant. And also, there's only so much anyone could do, especially 36-year-old Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick always gives you a better chance to win until a game or two later when you come to the conclusion that he doesn't give you a better chance to win.
And then Josh Rosen will come back.
And then Josh Rosen will come back.
The most exciting thing that happened about the Dolphins today was their beat writer for, I think it's the Florida Sentinel, Safid Dean, sent out a great hit of Brian Flores knocking the teeth out of Frank Gore in a college football game in 1993, forcing a fumble as a linebacker.
Wait, Frank Gore was playing college football in 1993?
I don't know what year it was.
That can't be true. No,
it wasn't.
How old is this man?
It wasn't 93. Whatever
2003,
year.
2003, maybe?
Whatever year it is, Flores had some pop, and I was excited to see it.
All right.
2003 is correct.
All right, Wes, buckle up. The NFL Competition Committee, their chairman, Rich McKay, told reporters on Tuesday, it's too early in the season to make a declaration on the effectiveness on replay review of offensive and defensive pass interference. Wes, I know you want to hear from Mr. McKay, don't you?
No.
Well, you're going to hear from him anyway.
I don't think, Ian, that we would give information on whether a rule that's been in place
for six weeks is working
or not working. You know, let's let the season play out. Just like in use of helmet last year, we waited till it was a new rule. We waited to the end of the year. We went back and examined all of it. We definitely looked at the officiating of it. We looked at the teaching of it. And I think we've gotten ourselves in a pretty good place.
Chris?
Well, it's like listening to Vince McMahon. I mean, why would I believe any of this? I think new listeners might be surprised because I grumble a lot about the rules. Check the archives of the first few years we had this podcast, and I said every time football is so much better than the other sports when it comes to the competition committee, making the game entertaining, progressing the game. I used to say that all the time, and now they can't get out of their own way, and it's this competition committee. Look, this idea that we have to wait till the end of the year to know this is a debacle is crazy. So what's your goal? So that by playoff time, we're going to have a totally different rule than the one's been called all year? That nobody's going to know what passer... All these guys have been told you have to mug someone at the catch in order for it to be called. It only matters if it happens in January. That can't be a goal. It's not a goal. It's like when the catch rule was in place and we kept hearing this boogeyman of fumbles. Oh, no, we can't change the catch rule because then there'll be so many fumbles. Wait, we had the similar catch rule 10 years before that, and fumbles weren't an issue. There's always some boogeyman now that they got to tell us about. It's a credibility issue. It's a waste of time issue. You cannot show something on a TV screen and then tell people you didn't see that.
Well said. Moving on. The Patriots made a roster move. They suspended veteran defensive lineman Michael Bennett for their Monday night game against the New York Jets. Why? It was conduct detrimental to the team. He was not at practice on Tuesday. He did issue a statement to ESPN regarding the one-week ban on Friday. I had a philosophical disagreement with my position coach that has led to my suspension. I apologize to my teammates for any distraction this may have caused. He played 11 sacks against the Giants, 11 snaps against the Giants, 14 snaps against the Redskins, so doesn't have the role he wants. But I'm just really taken by how the Patriots even turned Michael Bennett into a robot. I mean, that's Michael Bennett's statement? That's what we get from Michael Bennett after he gets suspended?
Really wants to win that Super Bowl.
They turned him into a robot.
Well, not on the field.
Man created machines to lead
that's what Michael Bennett sounds like now, Mark. That's what he sounds like, Sessler.
I mean, I knew a sound bit was coming, so I didn't want to interrupt.
Tough crowd. What do we think about this?
He's not a robot on the field. I think the defense is different than they ever imagined. They played four men defensive line almost half the snaps last year. This year they play a four-man defensive line, virtually no snaps. It's a 3-4 defense where they're asking the defensive linemen to occupy blockers. It's not really what Michael Bennett does or necessarily wants to do probably. And so he's not really playing. I mean, a guy like Adam Butler is playing way more than Michael Bennett. I think they'll find a way to use him eventually because that's just what they do.
Or he'll be chopped unless – I mean, I would love if he could come in and maybe
– the Eagles could use him, you know, in his normal role. I do wonder, and there's been speculation in New England, like – would he have a decent trade market that you get anything for Michael Bennett? You would think the Eagles would be like, come on, give him to me. We'll give you, I don't know.
How many teams has Michael Bennett been on now? I feel like he changes teams like three times a year now.
Hawks, Seahawks,
ever
Eagles.
Since he, you know, generated his slight towards you at the Super Bowl, Dan, he's been a journeyman.
I almost forgot about that.
Think about that. Put it all together. Finally in the news, Brock Osweiler announced his retirement. I'm extremely grateful for the time I did receive playing in the National Football League, he said in an interview with 9 News. He hangs up his cleats, having earned $41.3 million over 7 seasons.
I'd retire too.
Timing is everything.
What more is to be accomplished?
I mean, Bill O'Brien's pulled off a lot of career kind of resuscitations or just like hanging, you know, walking that high wire act and keeping it all going. Surviving the Brock Osweiler fiasco to get to the point he is now where he could make those Tunsil trades and everything else that's actually looking great this year was his greatest feat. Because that usually would bury lesser men.
Signed him to that big contract, but they were able to move him out of town
quickly.
To the Browns.
1 year.
And very quickly, yes, was able to diagnose, I botched this. Let's go get a young player who just so happened to be Deshaun Watson. And by the way, as bad as John Elway has been since the Super Bowl, he got bailed out of that because he offered Osweiler a ton of money to stay in Denver. So could this Elway messy post-Super Bowl 50 legacy could even be worse right now, but he got bailed out there.
That's a good point.
People also thought that the way that the Browns traded for Osweiler to absorb big chunk of salary cap away from the Texans and get a pick, that would be the wave of the future. How many teams have done that since?
Well, right. They got Austin Corbett for the trouble, right? Of those. But who knows? I don't know which pick it turned out to be.
Helped everything.
There are no Osweilers in the future, so it can't be a wave.
That is what's happening in the news. All right. Let's get to it. Trade scenarios that aren't stupid clickbait. Buy-in for idiots, so throw one out there. We got to hear who the players involved. I'd like to know the terms as well to really decide whether or not this is a feasible trade.
All right, I'll throw out one before someone else throws out a Nick Foles trade.
Smart.
You know,
you want to get in front of an exercise like this so you don't lose one of your.
I mean, this one makes so much
reps.
Sense. Now, this Thursday's game, which we'll get to in a second, could have an effect on the Denver Broncos. But let's say they lose this game. And let's say they're thinking about next year. I think they could trade a couple veterans over to the Jacksonville Jaguars and get the quarterback they wanted all along in Nick Foles. Chris Harris, Derek Wolf, and a third-round pick for Nick Foles. Now, that almost sounds like a lot.
A lot.
That's way too much. Chris Harris is a better player than Nick Foles.
Here, listen to this. Chris Harris and Derek Wolf are on the last year of their contract. It's just for this year. It's just to make the Jaguars better this year. Wolf didn't look like his career would necessarily be continuing maybe that longly, at least the way he was playing earlier. So that's just, again, another guy on his contract year that you're just taking a swing at. And a third-round pick. Considering the price of quarterbacks, including, you know, Nick Foles and other trades, I actually think that's pretty reasonable. You're basically getting rid of two guys you want to get rid of anyways, and you're trading a mid-round pick, and suddenly you have your starter for late this season and then into next season. at a very reasonable price. Everyone's happy.
No way I'm doing that if I'm the Broncos.
Really?
No way. Why would I believe I that Foles is better than having Flacco and Drew Locke?
My concern would be just what is Nick Foles as a 16-game starter at this point? There's just too much evidence that durability is an issue, and his stretches of play that last beyond in Philadelphia three or four games.
Here's what John Elway, if he's done any, he hasn't done anything right at quarterback. You got to keep taking swings until you get one.
Yeah, but that swing's costing a third round pick, Chris Harris, Derek Wolfe, and the possibility of getting back into the race.
Those two guys are giveaways. I mean, they're going to give them away to someone.
But you're also giving up 10 games of your season.
Right. I'm assuming they're going to lose Thursday night, and that they're not going to be a factor. 2 weeks from now, they might be 2-6.
It's always dangerous bringing this up in this room, but that would also then be turning over the franchise to Gardner Minshew after four games.
No, I'm not going to come at you about that because I think you need to be sure about Gardner Minshew because we talk about the first round quarterbacks that flame out. There's been just as many stories of guys that turn it on for 6 or 7 weeks, then they're totally exposed. And so
I'm not saying that's what I think Minshew is, but it would be a big leap to Foles, who you had coveted for a long time. You give him the deal, you get him on the first day of free agency, and because he gets hurt and this unknown comes in and lights it up, you make the move.
Yeah,
I think we're
going to be concerned about the sample size of Nick Foles as a starter, well, we should definitely be about a rookie who's been exciting but been in there for a month plus.
All right. Not bad, Greg. Not bad. Not bad at all.
A little clickbaity, but...
I wouldn't get too upset.
Anything with Foles is going to be clickbaity.
All right. You know what? I'm feeling generous. I'm going to stay out of the way here. I want to hear more from you guys. Wes.
Well, we talked about that the norm...
Thank you.
What is the norm around the league? And what we talked about zigging when everyone else is zagging. Well, overpaying and swinging for the fences, worrying about the future later, is the new norm. The Rams, the Texans, the Steelers with Minkah Fitzpatrick, Chiefs with Frank Clark, Bears with Khalil Mack, Saints with Marcus Davenport, 49ers with Dee Ford. And I've got the Trent Williams to the Browns thing. There's some smoke here. I don't know if there's any fire, but there's definitely some smoke with John Dorsey, Browns GM, saying he's had a few conversations with Redskins GM Bruce Allen, but it takes two to tango. Canton Repository reported that Trent Williams should be on the Browns roster quite soon. Seems like more of a rumor than anything else. But there does appear to be smoke here, and I think the Browns would have to overpay. We're in a seller's market. And right now you have Bruce Allen running the football side of one of the most valuable franchises in the NFL. And instead of mining that 31-year-old with major durability issues and no intention of ever playing for your team, for a bounty of draft picks to rebuild, you're opting for spite. You're just saying I'm waiting. I'm not gonna trade him. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt and saying that he's simply holding out for a godfather deal in an obvious seller's market. What about a first, third, and fifth round pick for Trent Williams? Browns have an extra mid-round pick for Duke Johnson and another fifth for Wyatt Teller trade. So they've got some extra pick. This one actually reminds me a little bit of the Amari Cooper trade. The need is for a number one wide receiver, and there's only one available. Now the need is for a left tackle. There's only one available. You have to overpay if you want him.
The reason I do it if I'm Cleveland, whether you like the cost or not, is that the problem isn't going away. You're going to have to go into the offseason where probably he's the number one tradable target still, if that's what the Redskins are saying they want to do. Or you have to hope that you hit on a left tackle in the draft, which has been a dodgy proposition for teams too. We know he's good. You get him this season and you get him into the future, and he's not a young left tackle. It's not Laremy Tunsil. So the sooner the better. And if you're the Redskins, you're going to get more now, I think, than you would 6 months from now in the offseason, I presume.
From the Browns' side of it, he's going to want to become the highest-paid left tackle in the league, right? Or otherwise, he's going to be as upset. I know there was some medical stuff with Washington.
I don't think this is about money.
It's always about money. Everything's about money.
Yeah, but I think Washington, he feels burned by the way.
That's a big part of this.
He wasn't looking for a new deal. He doesn't want to play for the Redskins.
If he gets traded, you don't think he's going to be looking for a new contract?
Then you give him a new deal because it's the most important position.
Working under the assumption, which I guess could be flawed, that Trent Williams wouldn't want a new deal to replace his current one, you have Odell Beckham, one of the highest paid wide receivers in the league, Baker Mayfield on a rookie deal, but won't be forever and will want Mondo money, Nick Chubb, you already have Myles Garrett, who's going to need big money, you have Denzel Ward, who's going to need big money. I guess the one thing you get in trouble with potentially in bringing in a veteran left tackle is you don't want to be top heavy team. We've talked about that on this podcast.
But the names you mentioned makes it they should pay for Trent Williams now because Baker, Ward, and Chubb won't have to be paid for a long time.
Well, also we can't like talk about the Rams being at the forefront of team building by paying huge money.
I don't think the Rams are.
Well, all right, I don't agree with you. But if they're paying five or six veterans exorbitant money, the Browns were talking about three or four people that aren't going to get paid for at least two more seasons.
Well, what's unsaid in all this is there's a new CBA coming in 2021, in theory. And I think the Rams are playing a little into that uncertainty. Where is this cap going to go? Like, what is that landscape going to look like in general? Who knows? Trent Williams is about as high risk, high reward as you can possibly have. He's not Laremy Tunsil. He didn't play that well last year. In the previous two seasons, he played through a torn patella tendon, and then last season, he missed time with thumb, knee, and rib injuries. He's also one of the great left tackles.
It's a lot going on there.
A borderline Hall of Fame player if he had been on a different franchise, maybe even with this franchise. So he could be a total win, but there's a ton of risk that comes with it.
Mark.
All right. This is someone I thought would have been traded before, and he wasn't. It's Melvin Gordon. And here, the reason I think you have a seller potentially in the Chargers is because of the elongated holdout, because he's returned to the field and he's just not really a fit, and he's not boosting the offense. You are already super deep at the position. If anything, Melvin Gordon, and it's not his fault, has come back and reduced the value of Austin Ekeler. And kind of the offense for the last couple weeks where they're trying to shove him in there and give him increased carries, it just feels like you're catering to all the wrong ideas here.
I want to hear where you see him going, because I kind of was racking my brain on that, where Melvin Gordon makes sense in a trade.
It's not an immediate home run this minute. But the reason I think it would make sense is that you are the Buffalo Bills that are going to need to be a run-heavy team no matter what because of the quarterback you have. Frank Gore has been good this year, but after this season, Frank Gore will not be on the Bills. Devin Singletary is valuable, but behind him, you've got nothing. So you'd have Melvin Gordon and Devin Singletary rolling into the offseason. And I think you sign Melvin Gordon without even worrying about it to a long-term extension, and you have a backfield to battle against.
I have bills for Melvin Gordon, too.
Wow.
I like it.
Look at that. I think Singletary is a core piece to build around. The problem is you just haven't seen it too much.
And it might be their Ekeler, though.
Right. He should be paired. It's not a bad thing to pair him with someone anyhow. I don't like that for, 2019 Frank Gore.
Frank Gordon's not going anywhere.
I don't think he
was playing college in 1993.
Right. I don't think Melvin Gordon is necessarily field ready at this point, so I don't think he has to go play 30 snaps for the Bills next week or something.
I also didn't mention
the terms, so they got him for nothing.
I would like to know the terms. What is Melvin Gordon worth? I don't think you
can get a first-round pick for Melvin Gordon. That's just me. I'm not great at this game. I think second-round pick.
Second-rounder.
Maybe even third and something else instead of a second.
You know,
I don't even think you can get a second. I don't know if you can get a third.
Bro.
Third seems right.
Third feels like you could have a high value.
I mean,
everyone's got a third for Tyrod Taylor.
You got Devin Singletary.
Or a second, I mean, whatever
in
it was.
The third.
If you're willing
to pay a Gordon money too, a third, that's a lot.
Mark, you really brought that in for a landing. Good job.
Thank you.
Nice player.
Thank you, Dan.
Nice team. Even also, the terms were pretty good.
Also, a 35-year-old running back, it's reasonable to suspect that he may not be as strong in January as he was in
January. I remember you honking about Frank Gore being done about 4 years ago. He's still chucking, breaking records.
He's chucking and breaking records. All right, I will now go. Maybe I'll even snake it. Get a double on this one. All right. He had 3 touchdowns last week. Value will never be higher. He still hates his quarterback and doesn't want to be in Minnesota. Stephon Diggs. and I think about who's a contender who really needs wide receiver help. It's the Green Bay Packers. Now, do the Vikings want to trade
one of their top
offensive assets to a division rival? Probably not. So this is more, maybe a little clickbaity, but also a logical fit because I think the Packers need help even with Davante Adams healthy, which he is not. And he might not be healthy all year. We'll see. Turf toe, it's not something you mess with. So the Packers might find themselves in a desperate situation where they really feel like they need to make a move. Because I will say that MVS, jury is out there, but he hasn't come exploding out of the gates in his number two slash number one role with the Packers.
That's fair, dog.
Geronimo Allison, same thing. And he actually exited their last game with an injury. So he hasn't jumped off the page. I know the Lizard had a big catch. I didn't even know who that person was before Monday.
I love the Aaron Rodgers stare to the sideline when Lazard caught the touchdown. Like, see, I told you this guy could play. Stop playing him.
Lazard looks like a player.
Maybe the Lizard can play. But, you know, they need contributions now so this offense does not stagnate.
I mean, if we're not counting on Gardner Minshew, should we be counting on Lazard after the performance?
I am not. That would be a happy surprise if he ends up being their top wideout or a big contributor. So Stephon Diggs wants out. Send him to the Packers. And see, sometimes you can get cute with the terms here. You send a second and a fourth to Minnesota, and they send you Diggs and a fifth, and everyone is happy.
Why would the Vikings be happy with
it? Hey, Viking. Hey, Packers, come beat us this year in the division.
Why would they be happy? Yeah, because Diggs is unhappy, and sometimes, as we learn in the NFL, you lose your agency as an organization when a man doesn't feel good anymore.
No, they have all the agency in the world. They control his rights. They can
do they, though?
Want.
This team is as win now as any team out there. The Vikings are in win now mode. I just don't see them giving up Stephon Diggs.
I think they're also
the
like
Jaguars thought they were
the Jets
in win now
and
more.
The Patriots. The Jets and the Patriots are never.
The Raiders thought they were win now mode.
They're never trading to each
other.
You
guys got to catch up to the times. It's not about whether teams want to keep guys anymore. It's whether guys want to stay.
But they would never help the Packers.
You got to add a first round pick and then some.
Why?
Because Stephon Diggs is the best receiver on that team, better than Adam Thielen, and he's one of the best in the NFL getting open.
That's a hot take.
He's a top 20 NFL receiver. You're not going to trade him to your big division rival almost under any circumstance, I would say. I would say even if they were 1-4, they probably wouldn't, much less 4-2.
I just feel like if you're going to give him away for that low cost, not that far after the Amari Cooper deal, you're going to get targeted by your fans and others detracting. They're going to come all over that deal.
I just think that.
I'm going to phrase that differently.
I was wondering if anyone was going to do it.
Everyone did. So.
I just think you guys saying like, at 4-2, they wouldn't do it. Maybe it has nothing to do with that. This is the modern landscape of the NFL.
If Stephon Diggs tell me a division rival that's just giving away great players
Stephon
to another
Diggs
division
really
rival.
Really wants to no longer be on the Vikings. He knows what he has to do it.
It's different. Stephon Diggs just signed a 5-year deal or a 4-year deal. I mean, he just signed to re-up with this team. Jalen
Antonio
Ramsey
Brown just signed a deal with the Raiders.
Antonio Brown's a crazy person.
I stand by my trade. And now I'll snake to another deal.
All right.
The Eagles, they're not going anywhere if they don't fix that secondary. Let's face it. That's been a problem all year. And they couldn't even compete, speaking of Stephon Diggs and Minnesota. They went to Minneapolis and couldn't even compete in that game. They just got roasted by Kirk Cousins in that game, giving up over 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. And it's a recurring issue for them. They need help in that back end. And you know the Eagles, a team that's in the mix, even if they've been disappointing, you know Trader Howie's going to be busy. There's going to be at least one Eagles trade before the deadline, maybe more. So I'm going to just piece it together that they're going to go get a cornerback. And I'll throw out Janoris Jenkins of the Giants, a veteran who's up and down as a player, but perhaps with Jim Schwartz on that defense, they say, "Hey, maybe we could, help this guy out, build his, improve his game a little bit, and maybe he's revitalized getting out of New York, where it's been a pretty rough sledding since he got there. Pretty much, he's got one more year left on his deal." He's overpaid for what he's given the Giants, but it's not something that's going to bring down your organization if the Eagles can make it work financially. So, Janoris Jenkins, how about a fourth round pick to the Giants in exchange for Jenkins?
I admire you because
you can leave it there.
It's aggressive. That's a statement on its own. I mean, it's aggressive to suggest two inside division trades back to back in the snake position in our draft. So I think you did a nice job there.
I thought about the same combination. I had Janoris Jenkins going to the Seahawks because I don't think the Giants would help the Eagles potentially.
They'd love to get him off their books, though.
I think they would be happy to dump him at this point, and he would not be on the team. And that's why I don't think it would cost that much.
It's inside football terminology.
I love it.
I think you're right. He's not on the team next year. They might as well save the $5-6 million he's still owed this year. The Seahawks seem like they would maybe take a crack at old Jack Rabbit, put him on the other side of Shaq Griffin.
Jack Rabbit Jenkins.
The Eagles did get good news today. Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby, who are their two best cornerbacks in a world where they're healthy, although they haven't been in a long time, returned to practice. So that could help them.
Greg, excuse me. We're snaking. Mark.
Well, I'll make quick terminology on your Eagles path, because I had a lot of players going to the Eagles, and I like the position too. I think Chris Harris to the Eagles is out there because he gets mentioned over and over and whispered about in these trade rumors. And where is this coming from? Just thin air? And he's coming
from the same guy who's selling cars out in Denver. That's what I think.
Well, exactly. And I think that Chris Harris to the Eagles,
this one's
also
for me.
Eagles Broncos are not going to toy with each other at all this season. There's no, you know, it's an easier trade partner.
Ah.
And the Chris Harris is not long for Denver, I don't think. So Eagles, but I think he's a much better player than Janoris Jenkins. So I mean, there's a reason.
You can use them both.
The reason I'm sitting here and not in a front office, because the terms are always shaky. But a third round pick for Chris Harris, that feels like the Broncos didn't get a whole lot.
I like
lot,
how your confidence falls off a table when it comes times for the terms.
Because the terms are ridiculous to me in most of these deals, and I think they're often surprising.
They're also shifting. People are paying way more now than I remember at any time in the NFL.
Compensatory pick is part of it. You're going to get one if Chris Harris leaves, and you know the formula, you're expecting to get one for the formula. It's tricky.
Wes, you're up.
Dan, would you take a second-round pick for Leonard Williams?
Yes. Right now?
All right, it's a deal. Leonard Williams to the Packers for a second-round pick. He and Dean Lowry bookend Kenny Clark.
They're not going to give – I'll tell you why I do. And I like Leonard Williams, even if he never became like the Warren Sapp or whatever people always say about interior linemen when they get drafted high in the first round. They're not going to give him a massive contract after the year. And somebody's going to be willing to look at his potential and give him huge money in free agency. So you're going to lose him. And then what would you get? Probably like a third-round pick? So if you're offering me a second-round pick, let's go. Let's fly.
To the Packers who
send him out of the conference and, you know, that's it.
Played better run defense last week, but run defense has been an issue. He could line up there as a 3-4 defensive end. That's where he belongs anyway.
And they have Quinnen Williams there, of course, who they drafted in the first round this year. So
I don't know why we're always trying to make the Packers better, but I like it.
Yeah, and does Mike Pettine, he didn't cross over with Leonard Williams, right? You don't get that.
Would have liked to, I'm
don't
sure.
think so.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It does sound, you keep on hearing it among the Jets beat writers, that they are going to make a move. I do wonder, though, what would happen, Greg, if by some miracle they beat the Patriots on Monday night, if that would change everything about their philosophy. You've heard Robbie Anderson thrown out there as a possibility. Leonard Williams is being bandied about constantly.
Well, the trade deadline is two games away for all these teams, so that's a lot more information. If the Broncos, for instance, win two games, they're probably not going to be looking to be as aggressive as if they're 2-6. It makes a big difference. And the Jets, I would throw into that camp. Janoris was my second one, but I'll just throw out a player I think can help a team. How about Kenyon Drake to the Colts for a fifth rounder? I think Kenyon Drake could be a great extra weapon on an offense.
I do too.
The Colts could use some more weapons, and I do not think it would cost much to get half a year of Kenyon Drake.
I've got Kenyon Drake to the Jags for a fourth round pick because Leonard Fournette, like, and the passing game turns around like sort of like a cruise ship in the Panama Canal.
Wouldn't have to move. Like if, you know, you're moving from one Florida residency to
cruise
another, not that
Panama
long of a drive.
Canal. Like Owen Daniels in week one of the 2013 season.
Like Jason Witten after his drop last week.
Oh, poor Jason. Still having a better year in 2019 than 2018.
Made some plays. Having a better year than Jimmy Graham is.
He's comeback player of the year.
Let's just say it.
There are now reports around the Packers with the headline, Jimmy Graham not ready to lose snaps just yet. That's the kind of season that we're talking about with Jimmy Graham.
They're waiting until Tanyan comes back.
All right, good
Tanyan.
Good seg. Thursday night football coming up, week 7. It's a freight train. And I understand if you're a fan of the Lions or the Packers, you feel like you got jobbed Monday night football, the way the timing fell with our podcast this week. I get it. Don't take it personal. It's just a matter of timing. But when we hit the preview, the Thursday show preview, we will hit those teams hard and we'll touch on what happened on Monday night. And yes, Lions fans, we know. You know, we're here for you this season.
I think they have to have noticed an uptick in our interest in them and attention towards them.
We were as furious as Kevin Patra about the officiating in that game Well, not me. I got a lock out of it. But everyone else deserves to be angry about those penalties.
Somehow that got mentioned.
I mean, I think our nice words that we've said about the Lions will more than make up for their back-to-back gut-wrenching losses.
So now, speaking of the AFC West, because we were speaking about that division earlier on today's podcast, the Kansas City Chiefs coming off back-to-back losses, both at home, by the way. Sleep on that a little bit. It's one thing to drop a couple games in a row during a long season, but when you do a 1-2 at home, now you got to go on the road. Well, let's see how they respond to that. They go to Empower Field at Mile High, Wes, to face the Denver Broncos, who it's interesting because the Chiefs, they win 4 to start the season and lose 2. The Broncos, they lose 4 to start the season and now win 2. And this is a game, Wes, where we're going to learn a lot about where the Chiefs are offensively because the Broncos' defense has figured it out.
Chiefs already ruled out Sammy Watkins, Kendall Fuller, their nickelback, Chris Jones, their best defensive player, and offense left tackle Eric Fisher, left guard Andrew Wiley. They are extremely shorthanded and were outplayed last week when they were shorthanded. Now they go to Denver, where the defense, just in the last 2 weeks, has jumped from the late 20s to number 8 in DVOA. They are now a top 10 defense.
Shout out, I'll do that.
Well, it's two dominant showings in a row. And then if you throw in the Jaguars game the week before, dominant for about 2.5 quarters of that one as well. So you're playing a Denver defense that has transformed the last few weeks. Kareem Jackson playing at a very high level. Alexander Johnson, their inside linebacker I talked about on Sunday's podcast, has been one of the best inside linebackers in the league the last 2 weeks. Mike Purcell moves into the starting lineup. They've got a lot of changes on that defense, and they're playing well.
You hear what that is? You guys from Wes?
What's that?
It's the excited
timber. It's coming back a little bit. Yeah.
Look,
they've got them. They've hooked them. They're going back up the roller coaster.
I say that I concede that I was too high on them in the summer, but I think I have been on their pulse since the season started. I know what this Broncos team is, and a lot of people don't.
Well, their season comes down to Thursday night. I mean, it's over if they lose this game and they're 2-5, as far as I'm concerned. But you win, and this is kind of a fork in the road game for the AFC West, and they're one game out of the top spot in the division, and the Chiefs have all sorts of problems, and you already have a win over the Chiefs. The Raiders are weirdly in the mix, and it's a totally different division. This is a type of game, though, I think that great players, historic type of players, they go find a way to win it. Your team is banged up. You're facing a less talented Broncos team on the road. It's a short week. You just need Patrick Mahomes to go in there, carry you, get an ugly win, get out of town, bury the Broncos, bury the ball. Tony Soprano.
We love Andy Reid's pass-happy tendencies. Like, he's this new, you know, he's an old coach, but everyone's supposedly following his lead and just passing all the time now, except that works great when everything's working. He's got to find a way to run the ball and help his defense get off the field because his defense is getting – they're playing 40 minutes the last couple of weeks.
I was hoping you were just going to keep going there. Like, honestly, I was hoping you would go for 15 straight minutes.
That's next episode.
And where I thought you were going is where I will complete it because, yes, great players, when their team needs them, step up, especially when the lights are on in primetime. It brings out that extra gear. And after I broke my skid with that – fairly, you know, very close to a miracle win, a miracle lock for the Packers there. I will now get behind Patrick Mahomes on a two-game losing streak.
I did think about that.
And I'm going to lock up the Chiefs on the road, shorthanded against the revitalized Broncos team because I think Patrick Mahomes is too good to lose 3 games in a row. And we're going to see something special from him in this game.
I think he's too good too, but I don't know if he's too good to do that banged up, physically not the same guy he's been. His yards per attempt have dropped in half since he had an ankle injury. You can run on their defense.
Let's go.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the Broncos, this is a team. A couple weeks ago, I would have thought this would have been a nice 39-7 Chiefs celebration. You just roll into Denver. You eat your free dinner at the hotel. You drop a 39 points on Denver, and you fly home, and it's not been all been fine.
What a nice
Chiefs,
weekend.
Chiefs are in a tough place. They ever lose this game, they have the Packers and Vikings next. They have not been the same team on offense at all.
Offense.
Broncos
or
defense
on defense.
Yeah,
awesome.
Their offense isn't my concern. They moved the ball the last
They only punted once last week.
Last week.
Pointed out.
But the defense is as bad as it gets right now. I mean, they're among the worst in the entire NFL. This is kind of the ultimate test for Flacco here, because this is a game you should put up 27 to 30 points if you're a legit NFL offense, and you're gonna need to help your defense out, and we'll see.
Can't you? I like the
Chiefs too. I'm not locking.
I get a vision of who's going to be sitting up there with Joe Thomas and Colleen at the end, and everyone's in a celebratory move. I just have a feeling Philip Lindsay might be that person.
Oh, look at this.
Just keeps coming mentally into the headspace.
Well, considering Frank
is going to lock.
No.
Oh, okay.
Thursday night's the last kind of game I'd lock for a road team. The Chiefs are a different type of road team than most, but that's crazy territory. Thursday nights, freaky stuff happens.
Well, considering what Marlon Mack and Carlos Hyde just did to this defense, and then Frank Clark says we've lost the passion for defending the run.
I trust Andy Reid, and I trust Patrick Mahomes. Stop the skid.
I mean, Lindsay doesn't even own his own house or rent.
Lives with his parents.
His parents.
Hey, it's not a bad idea. Just save up money. Sounds like a good thing.
It's hard. He didn't get that Brock Osweiler money. He got Philip Lindsay money.
It's a red flag, man. Get out of that house. Go start a life.
Only like 22 years old.
Get a place with your college buddies, you know, in Hoboken. And you just loosen up. Meet the girls.
Seems like a long commute.
Go out to the bars.
Hoboken?
Enjoy yourself. Yeah, take the path into the city and, you know, enjoy yourself.
Right, but the city lives in Denver.
Correction, he's 25 years old. It's time to get out.
Right. I came back.
25? Come on, dude.
When I left Los Angeles with no plan and went back east, I stopped back in old Wilbraham, I think for about a week. It's one of the
Was it like a Garden State scenario?
Like one of the darkest, most depressing weeks of my life. I had to get out of there. It's tough. It's like, what am I
Head nod to the Rosenthal family.
I mean, they were great.
It's Deb listens to every show, like, right?
I might have been like 3 days. I don't even remember, but it was.
I'm sure your parents were rocks, harrowing. But otherwise you were thinking big picture type stuff, right?
I was just thinking, where am I?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. I got you. All right. You know, one day you go home, you go to your parents' house and stay the night, and you realize, wow, this is a house, but this isn't my home anymore. And maybe Philip Lindsay is going to come to that realization eventually. Because I think he needs to if he wants to take that step as
are we sure that's where he's living right now? As this is all this is.
It's been decided on the show.
Okay,
he lives in.
Well, if he's not, then people announcing their football games have been getting it wrong.
Mm.
All right, good stuff. All right, so whoa. You know, Steven, you're doing great behind the glass, but we're not ready to say goodbye.
My bad.
Erica's still on vacation. She
pick up from there.
Yeah.
Went to
weird, Spain. You know, flex by Erica. You know, say we put in a lot of work in the UK. Now I'm going to go disappear for a week or two in various locations across the world. She made that decision, and that's good for her. Steven, you've done an awesome job filling in. I just want to let the audience know what's coming up. Tomorrow night, we'll have that Thursday night recap, of course, and then Friday Yes, Friday, right? When do we put out Thursday. See,
it'll be
still jet lagged.
Yeah.
Thursday afternoon, you'll get the Week 7 preview. Thursday night, you'll get the Thursday Night Football recap. And, of course, we'll be back right here in the studio here on Sunday night recapping all the games that we preview tomorrow. Okay. Steven, thank you.
Gotcha.
Dan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and little Stevie. Behind the glass. He's not little, though. Till Thursday.